Welcome to an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma give their opinions on the latest happenings surrounding Yankees baseball, as well as dive into the hottest topics in the sports world. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Off the Wall podcast. We're not on the road today. We are back in the home office, that is my office, in the beautiful Yes Network compound. It's Chris Sheeran, Joe Auriemma, and a special guest today is Scott Garceau of the Scott Garceau Show down in Baltimore. It's an afternoon drive time sports talk show on Baltimore's 105.7 The Fan. Scott is also a Pro Football Hall of Fame Board of Selectors member, one of 44 members that meet each year at the Super Bowl to select the Hall of Fame inductees. He's been honored 7 times as State Sportscaster of the Year by the National Sportscasters and Sportswriters Association. He was the voice of the NFL's Baltimore Ravens radio network for the team's first 10 years and broadcast the team's Super Bowl 35 win, a win that we would like to soon forget up here in the New York area over our beloved New York football Giants. Scott, welcome to the program. We appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, I'm just glad I'm not in the snow. We're just far enough south where we might miss that big blizzard.
Yeah, absolutely. We're supposed to get at least 18 inches up here in beautiful New England. Scott, let's get right to it. Let's go back to the Super Bowl. Before we get to the blackout, which is the obvious question, let's start a little bit after the blackout and the hold or non-hold call. And Mike Pereira came out, and he was the former vice president of officiating for the NFL, and he said there was no way there could have been a call on that play. And he thought the officiating crew did the right thing by not throwing the flag. What has been the... And you go back 2 weeks beforehand, and San Francisco, you know, they're crying about this call, and it starts with their head coach. All they have to do is look at Navarro Bowman's hold on Roddy White against the Falcons 2 weeks before in the NFC Championship game that wasn't called.
So yeah, I'm surprised Jim Harbaugh's playing golf this week, because I thought his hand was still attached to his wrist in the holding call position. I thought that might be permanent for him. It was a play. I think I've seen 20 to 30 people between the NFL Network and ESPN and all the insiders describe the play, and it seems it's about half and half. Half think a flag should have been thrown. The other half said no. You know, the receiver initiated the contact. You got to let him play there. I tend to think, and maybe I'm a little prejudiced, I tend to think that a lot of officials don't want to throw that flag and decide a Super Bowl with that play. When there was something going on there, both players were engaged. If a flag would have gone, I wouldn't have been, oh, my God, how could they ever throw a flag on that play? I just think there was a lot of gray area there. And for most of the game, the officials were letting the guys play, and I think it was kind of consistent with the way they called the game. Now, what happened on the punt, on the safety, which really wouldn't change the game at all, but about 5 Ravens were tackling 49ers on that play.
But don't you think they were doing that on purpose? Because an offensive holding call in the end zone in the last 10 seconds, wouldn't that be a 10-second runoff?
I'm not sure about the runoff on that play. It wouldn't have changed anything because it would have been
a safety. It still would have been a safety because it was a penalty
but
in the end zone.
Don't you have to call it if a blocker is tackling a defensive player?
And more than one.
I don't care about the runoff or anything else. I would think you would have to throw a flag on that play, and nobody decided to it was worth that. And there were some good tackles.
They were the best tackles of the game.
yeah, some good coaching. I mean, the Ravens special teams coach Jerry Rosberg and John Harbaugh special team background for years. I'm sure they told their players, go ahead, hold them, do whatever you can. Let's see if we can run some time off.
Absolutely, and as you said, it was just great coaching. And let's go back to the 49ers 3 plays before that. You have Colin Kaepernick, one of the most electric quarterbacks in the league, and the play calling on the 3 plays before that, and even that play, you have this guy, you have this kid running all over defenses all through the playoffs. And basically, from the end of the blackout until that point, and then he goes away on the most important goal line stand in your season? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I think
that's what you let it. That's what you let this come down to, is that holding call and running out onto the field and, oh no, it was a hold. I mean, it was just awful, awful play calling.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are looking at that final series and and wondering. The one play, give the Ravens some credit defensively because they blitzed three out of those four plays, and the one play they didn't blitz, they guessed right. Dean Pease, the defensive coordinator, I think John Harbaugh wanted to blitz. Pease's initial reaction was no, and he kind of talked Harbaugh into not blitzing. It was the sprint out play where Kaepernick sprinted hard to the right.
Mm-hmm.
If they're blitzing hard up the middle there, he probably gets outside and either
he is
able to walk in or throw it to somebody who's wide open. So sometimes you guess right, and the Ravens defensively guess right on that play.
Well, let me get your thoughts on this, Scott, because I think the play of the game, and I think the play that saved the Ravens bacon, I know they were up 28-6 at one point before the blackout happened, but I think the play that saved the game was Ed Reed. And it was the first time the San Francisco 49ers were knocking on the door. It was when, I forget who sacked Kaepernick to force them into a field goal, but a play before that, I think it was the second down play, where Ed Reed broke coverage and sprinted directly at Kaepernick and forced him to make a pass. And I think that was the play of the game defensively for the Ravens with Ed Reed. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that one, and he was coming on the two-point conversion, too.
Yeah.
Where Kaepernick had to fire in a hurry, and they basically had no chance to complete that play. Great instincts. Ed Reed, they always talk about Ray Lewis, how he studies tape like nobody else and has players over to his house during the week and sees tape with his 17 years experience like nobody else. I'm not sure Ed Reed isn't right there with him because he's got great instincts for the game, been a playmaker for a lot of years, and you're never surprised to see Ed Reed make that kind of play.
And, you know, he just flew out of nowhere and made Kaepernick make that decision. And I think – I don't know what your thoughts are here, but I think – a lot of teams, especially the teams in San Francisco's division out there in the NFC West, are going to look at this Baltimore Ravens defense and how they handled this 49er offense in the Super Bowl and make that a blueprint, much like the Giants did against Tom Brady and the Patriots.
Yeah, I think the whole game plan was make Kaepernick beat you by throwing the football, probably in the pocket. So hit him, maintain the edges, turn him inside, don't let him get wide. But he still made plays. I was impressed. Kaepernick's postseason run was pretty courageous when you think he started by throwing a pick six against Green Bay. He was on the road against the number one seed in Atlanta down 17-0. They come back and win that game. They're buried in the Super Bowl. It looks like they're dead and gone, and he rallies them back, and they came, 5 yards away from winning the Super Bowl. So I think the kid's a player, and if he couldn't run a lick, I think he could probably make a living just standing in the pocket throwing the football.
Yeah, Kaepernick was very, very good for the 49ers, as you said, throughout the entire postseason. Almost brings them back with the biggest Super Bowl comeback in the history of the big game.
Mm-hmm.
But you know who else was elite? And I hate that word. I hate how it's bandied about in the NFL
Me
now.
Me too.
But it's getting really worn down. But, the conversations will start about Joe Flacco. Is he elite? Is he this? Is he that? Let's just call Joe Flacco for what he was this postseason. He was phenomenal.
11 touchdowns, no interceptions. I did the yardage thing. If you factored it over a 16-game season, it would add up to about 4,600 yards. Now,
wow.
Remember, you're playing most of these games on the road against the best teams in the NFL because they're playoff teams. That's what he did, and he really carried. It was kind of a two-pronged thing. Joe was phenomenal, and I think he had a chance to be phenomenal because their offensive line that was very inconsistent throughout the regular season came together and played the lights out. And part of that was they made a change late in the regular season with a game or two to go. They put Bryant McKinney in at left tackle. That flipped Michael Orr over to right tackle where he was much more comfortable. He has trouble with the speed rushers on the left side. And they moved Assemele, their rookie, who's probably going to be a Pro Bowl guard at some point. They moved him inside. And when they made that move, three positions got better in their offensive line. Looked like an entire different group than the bunch that had a good week and a bad week and was real inconsistent throughout the regular season.
I'm not even going to bother asking you where you rank Joe Flacco in the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL because I really don't have to. The guy's a Super Bowl MVP. And he dismantled along the way Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning, and Tom Brady. Outplayed all three of those guys to get to the big game and then outplayed Colin Kaepernick. In my eyes, he did. I just think. And the pocket passer, once again, as Joe and I talked about earlier this week, walks away with the Super Bowl ring and the quarterback who runs around does not. Now, do I think that'll change in the future? Maybe it will. But for right now, I am an old school guy when it comes to football, and the pocket passer will always be very close to me when I watch these games. Growing up watching Phil Sims and growing up watching John Elway and Brett Favre, he's more of a gunslinger running around, but still more of a pocket passer. One more for me, and that I got to mention the blackout just to wrap up the Super Bowl here before I hand it off to my partner and have him discuss the Hall of Fame with you. But the blackout, did you think that had anything to do with the 49ers being able to regain momentum? I know it's been talked about back and forth since the Super Bowl ended, but in your eyes, Scott, do you think that had anything to do with it?
Well, it was a pretty – you could draw a line through that game, and it was a pretty drastic turnaround. And I'm not sure why. If you're a championship team, and that's what the Ravens turned out to be, a delay that is the same for both teams shouldn't affect it that much. But they had everything going on their side. All the momentum was theirs. And then after they come back, the 49ers grabbed onto something, and they took off. Now, I think the 49ers are a good enough team that you would expect them to take somewhat of a run at some point, not to get blown out, 42-6 or something. But I'm not sure of that magnitude. So, yeah, I think it had an impact. And, you know, it happens in baseball. You get rain delays, and sometimes they're 30 minutes and sometimes they're 2 hours, and you have to deal with it. You're not used to dealing with it in football. I'm sure if the Ravens lost that game, they'd still be talking about power outages in Baltimore and if somebody pulled the plug and why did the 49ers I think both teams still had to come back and play football. The 49ers played a lot better after the power outage than the Ravens did until they made finally the goal line stand. But, yeah, it was pretty dramatic, the turnaround.
Hey, Scott, how are you? It's Joe Auriemma.
Good, Joe.
You know, it's funny because a lot of Giant fans are not fond of Jim Harbaugh. They love John Harbaugh, but they're not fond of Jim Harbaugh. And the pulse that we're getting is the joke around here is that Jim Harbaugh is so super competitive that he's the one who pulled the lights at the Superdome. So having a little bit of fun with that. But really, Scott, Eli Manning, two-time Super Bowl MVP, during Super Bowl week, picked the Ravens and said that, you know, this team reminded him so much of the Giants of 2011, the way they went on that run. And really, a lot stems with the Ravens from that Giants blowout, the 33-14 blowout. Do you see the comparisons, and what can you say about this run that the Ravens just went on?
You know, first of all, I think the comparison I see it, between Joe Flacco and Eli Manning, and I'm not sure where we rank those two, but a lot of Raven fans would be upset. Flacco, inconsistent. He didn't have a great regular season this year. Right. There was some inconsistency in his regular season, but he's kind of a laid-back guy. Joe is who he is. I think sometimes fans want to see a quarterback screaming at his offensive linemen. That's not Joe Flacco. I think he's true to his own personality. And he reminds me somewhat of Eli. Eli's not that guy that will rant and rave, and he's not the best post-game interview.
Right.
I think their personalities are somewhat similar. So here's the difference. I think as a fan or as a reporter, I looked at this team that lost four of its last five games and didn't like the way they were going into the playoffs. Now, the last game of the year, they had clinched everything. They played the final game of the year at Cincinnati basically like a preseason game.
Right.
Starters got very little play. So let's throw that one out. They had their end-of-the-season press conference yesterday, and I think Ozzie Newsome, the owner, Steve Bisciotti, said in-house they felt pretty good. They got healthy late in the year. They got guys back. Suggs looked like he'd missed the whole year. He came back. Ray Lewis came back late. Ellerby, one of their good inside young linebackers, came back healthy for the stretch run. So they got better from a health standpoint. And also, they thought a turning point was when the Giants came into Baltimore, needed that game to stay alive, and the Ravens really took it to them and ripped the Giants. So they looked at that game as kind of the turning point, the big win over the Giants at home. They kind of threw out the Cincinnati game. They thought they were healthy. They thought they were poised for a postseason run. So maybe some of us as fans said, oh, gee, this team's lost four of its last five. I don't know. I didn't feel great. I thought they would beat Indianapolis in round one at home and then go out to Denver, get beat, and that would be another, well, nice season. They won the division. You know, they played two postseason games. We've seen a lot of those. Instead, it was the beginning. the key. I mean, how fragile is this game? We're talking about the great Super Bowl champion Ravens today, but if they don't throw that miracle 70-yard pass in the final seconds at Denver, it's just another nice season, but nothing special.
Right, and that's the beauty of the NFL. That 70-yard bomb, you know, like you said, it could very well be the Denver Broncos today that we're talking about as Super Bowl champions.
Sure, yeah.
But really, the one guy, you know, I know we can talk about Joe Flacco all day, but the one guy to me that's been just the MVP of the Ravens down the stretch here, a guy who had a shot at a Super Bowl some years ago with the Cardinals, but Anquan Boldin, to me, just was so solid for the Ravens. This season, last season he was okay, but this season I felt like he had a real bounce-back season, and in the playoffs, I just thought that he stepped up, became that veteran presence in the offense, and just made some big, big-time catches.
Absolutely. He was phenomenal, and something happened late in the year. The Ravens went through that offensive coordinator change where Cam Cameron was let go and Jim Caldwell became the coordinator and the play caller. And something happened about the same time as the offensive line got better where Joe Flacco started trusting Anquan Boldin and even Torrey Smith to some respect, where when they had one-on-one coverage, even if they weren't open, throw the ball up there and give a guy like Boldin, who's so strong, his hands are so strong, give that guy a chance to make a play. And once Anquan made a few of those plays, I think Joe Flacco relaxed a little bit and said, okay, he doesn't have to be 2 or 3 yards open for me to get him the ball. I'll put it in his area and give him a chance to make a play. And he made a ton of them. So, Anquan Boldin was a big difference maker, especially in the postseason. Up to this point, he's been solid in his time in Baltimore, but not spectacular. He took it about 5 levels up in the playoff run, and I think he and Flacco got something going down the road. And Torrey Smith, obviously more of a speed guy that can stretch the defense. That's a nice combination. Pitta and Dixon, they're two young tight ends, are solid players. So they got a nice nucleus in that passing game.
Absolutely. And even Ray Rice coming out of the backfield, catching so many balls. He's great. One thing that, you know, we said we were going to talk about is the Hall of Fame. You are one of 44 selectors for the National Hall of Fame, Football Hall of Fame, in Canton, Ohio. So I have to ask you, you know, Bill Parcells makes it on the second time. You know, he is a legend here in New York for what he did with the Giants, then what he did with the Jets, also what he did with the Patriots here in New England. Scott, I know he didn't make it last year, and a lot of people were up in arms, but was this pretty much a slam dunk? You know, Parcells had to be in the Hall of Fame.
I never look at anything as a slam dunk. I had to present Jonathan Ogden, and I thought he was – you know, everybody came up to me and said, oh, he's in, don't worry about that. And I'd sat John down maybe 8 months before the vote and said, I just want to let you know, in my heart, you're a first ballot Hall of Famer, but – crazy things can happen, and there's only 5 spots there. And I pointed out to him when Shannon Sharpe retired, one of his teammates, Shannon owned every tight end record on the books,
but he
had to wait until his 3rd year before he was inducted. Chris Carter, you saw him in tears saying it was the greatest day of his life on Super Bowl Saturday. He had waited 6 years to get in.
Yeah.
So nothing ever is a slam dunk. Parcells, in my mind, he was going to be a Hall of Famer. I wasn't sure if it would be last year, this year, or next year,
right. But
he would get in. And I felt the same with Ogden, who fortunately did get in on the first ballot. So sometimes you say, okay, I know that guy should be in, but you tell me who to take off the list we just put in. Because
right. Like
this year, you have 5 modern day, and the 2 senior nominees, Dave Robinson and Curly Culp, they don't affect the other 5. They stand alone. So if you vote for a senior nominee, you're not taking a spot away from a Michael Strahan or a Warren Sapp
right.
or John Ogden or any of the other finalists.
You know, and you mentioned the 5 guys that made the Hall of Fame this year, all worthy candidates. You know, Warren Sapp and Larry Allen is, you know, just one of those guys. When you saw him play, he was absolutely Hall of Famer. And a guy, like you said, who's near and dear to your heart, Jonathan Ogden, for the fans here in New York that didn't get to see him week in and week out, the man was a Pro Bowler every year of his career, one of the greatest offensive linemen in the history of the game, and what can you say, you know, being that you were the play-by-play man for the Ravens for 10 seasons, what can you say about Jonathan Ogden?
Well, he played on teams that were dominated by defense, those great Raven teams like the Super Bowl 35 team. It was defense. It was kicker Matt Stover. And then it was Jamal Lewis running behind Jonathan Ogden. Think about this. Jamal had a 2,066-yard season, which was the second best in NFL history at the time. That year he had a 295-yard game. That was an NFL record. Adrian Peterson has since passed it with a 296 game, just a yard more. They were last in the league with Kyle Bowler in passing. So every team in the NFL was playing eight in the box. They knew the Baltimore Ravens ran the football. They weren't much of a threat to throw the football, and yet Jamal Lewis ran for 2,066 yards behind John Ogden. I mean, 6'9", 340. Ray Lewis used to say his feet are quicker than some of our running backs. So he had the size, the great wingspan. He averaged 1.2 false starts a year in his career and 1.2 holding penalties. So he didn't make mistakes. Kirk Ferentz, who's the head coach at Iowa now, was his line coach his rookie year. And Jonathan actually, they had two veteran tackles. So his rookie year, they had to move him inside. He started at left guard that year and then back to left tackle for the rest of his career. But Kirk Ferentz said, he said, the first day I saw him, I knew I was next to greatness. And he said, he may have made five mistakes his entire rookie year. Smart guy, could you know, bull rushers, he would just engulf them. Speed rushers didn't have a chance. Phil Cowher told me, he said, you just decided you try to attack the offensive line somewhere else because the best you could ever hope for would be a standoff with John Ogden.
Wow, that's amazing. And coming from Bill Cowher, that's quite a
compliment. Yeah, he got to see a lot of them, too.
Yeah. You know, Michael Strahan was so close this year on his first ballot. Again, he's going to have to, you know, wait another year, possibly a couple more years. But next year, the Super Bowl is here in New York. You know, coming to Giants Stadium, the MetLife Stadium now, the first cold weather Super Bowl in the history of the game. A good spot for Strahan to possibly get in. He was on the cusp. He was on the doorstep. What can you say about Michael Strahan's chances of possibly getting in on a second ballot?
Yeah, I think he gets in, and it would be nice timing next year to see him walk out like Jonathan Ogden got to walk out to the coin toss. They bring the Hall of Famers out at the Super Bowl coin toss, and what a great day for him to walk out there with his own team playing in the game. And I would think it would be probably just as emotional for Michael Strahan to walk out there, you know, near the place where he made his name with the Giants and be out there for that coin toss. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if he's part of that class next year. Hall of Fame resume. I think for a lot of voters this year, when we made the final reduction vote, the way it works is when we go in, we present, do the presentations for all 17. We vote on the seniors first. Don't know the results of that, but they're kind of a yes and no vote. And then when we get down to the modern day players, we cut down. We're asked to reduce our ballot from 15 to 10. So we turn our 10 in, and the accountants come back. There's a little more conversation. Then we're asked to reduce from 10 to 5. And I think at that point, that's where it got tough for a lot of the voters. And I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the voters had through their mind at that point, let's see, I'm down. Is it Strahan? Is it Sapp? Two defensive linemen. They played the game differently, but they're both, I think, Hall of Fame players. And I got a feeling that maybe Sapp and Strahan were on the minds of a lot of voters. And Warren Sapp got a few more votes than Michael Strahan this time. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if Michael gets in next year. Sapp, he was a dominating, you know, defensive player of the year, nearly 100 sacks as an interior lineman. Played that three technique like nobody else, but Michael Strahan, player, you know, made the all-decade team, 140-some sacks, led the league in sacks, had that record-setting sack year. I think he'll get the cap.
I wonder if Chris Carter is going to send Buddy Ryan a thank you card. I mean, because all he did is catch touchdowns, and now he's in the Hall of Fame. So,
well, he had 130 touchdowns, which somebody brought up in the meeting somewhere that, you know, Wes Welker is one of the top receivers in today's game, and he's done some real big things with Brady in New England. him, but Wes Welker would have to play at his current rate of touchdowns. He would have to play until he was 54 to get up to 130 where Chris Carter is.
So that is a dazzling
fact. You know. Yeah, and that, there was a logjam between Carter, Andre Reed, who a lot of people loved his career. He played in that cold weather in Buffalo.
Yeah,
and I think both Deion Sanders and Rod Woodson told me last week at the Super Bowl, if he had to break the logjam of Tim Brown, Andre Reed, and Chris Carter, that he would put Andre Reed number one in that group.
Wow.
And I think Deion Sanders said the same thing. So I think it's probably good news for Andre Reed that Chris Carter got in because it breaks the logjam. But here comes Marvin Harrison next year. So
yeah.
It never ends. There's a pretty big backup. You can only get five in, and I guess it wouldn't be a Hall of Fame if it wasn't tough to get into.
You couldn't say it any better than that. Just one last thing for me, Scott, and that is, thank goodness we don't have to see that San Francisco 49er fan commercial on the couch anymore. My God, was I sick and tired of that thing. They keep moving the couch because it didn't work.
Well, yeah, by the time we get to the Super Bowl, we've seen a lot of commercials many times, right?
Goodness.
We love the game, but some of the commercials can wear us out.
The Clydesdales did not disappoint. That was another great spot by Budweiser, by the way.
Yeah, you know what? Being at the game, and I guess I've probably been to 12 of the last 14 Super Bowls, I DVR them and sometimes get back, but usually when you DVR the game, you're going through the commercials.
Yeah.
I guess I need to stop off and check a few of these because some of the stuff you're talking about is a foreign language to me.
Well, you could just Google them and they pop up. You don't even have to go to the DVR. Hey, listen, Scott, we really appreciate the time.
It's all right, guys.
Scott Garceau of 105.7, The Fan down in Baltimore. We really appreciate the time, and hopefully we could talk again in the future.
All right, survive that snowstorm.
All right, thanks a lot, Scott. Take care. This is the Off the Wall podcast on YesNetwork.com. And don't forget, you could also subscribe at iTunes. For Jory Emma, I'm Chris Sheeran. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next time.
The Off the Wall podcast comes to you each week on iTunes and YesNetwork.com. If you like what you're listening to, simply subscribe to the show on iTunes. And if you have an extra minute, leave a comment and rating.